Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top trade sales through Diamond to retailers for January 2019. This includes hardcovers, softcovers, trades, original graphic novels, probably some digests, a few other things they toss in for good measure, maybe even a coloring book or two. And like I said, this is what is sold into retailers. This is what counts for publishers as sales in the direct market. This is what they're doing their planning and budgeting and stuff on, and, you know, their whole making profit on thing. It does not include what percentage of the stuff that went into retailers actually went out of their doors into our hands, because we just don't have that data. I would love to have point of sales information. Just, I think there's so much analysis that could be done with that could really fundamentally change behaviors at the publishing, the creator side of things that could actually benefit sales across the board. If that data were properly available and understood, this is something I really think Comics Pro really needs to step up to the plate and do if they're not doing it already, and actually start publishing some information on that, because ton of information on end reader behavior that if we better understood, publishers could be acting in accordance with that versus in opposition to it that they seem to do in times. And life would be better. Sales would be better. Sales would be better, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, especially making decisions based on data versus hunches and guesses is always better, I think.
Well, I think there's a need for the hunches and guesses, but then you got to take those hunches and guesses and compare them to the data and see if they hold water or not.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they fit the facts, that doesn't mean they're true.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's other stuff that could be going on masking what you think is happening with what's really happening, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think that kind of information is sorely needed, particularly as sales are just kind of so-so sometimes. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300, now keep in mind we do have the top 500 actually, but we're going to look at the top 300 so we could do some month-to-month comparisons later back if we want to. 36.4% of it went to Marvel, 21.42% of the units went to DC, and 15.15% to Image. We then flip that to total retail dollars, which admittedly is a bit of a fictional number because, yeah, we're paying that to retailers, but that's certainly not what the publishers are getting because, well, they discount to Diamond, Diamond discounts to the retailer, those two get a cut of the pie and so forth. But at full retail dollars, 44.61% of the dollars went to Marvel, 23.65% went to DC, and 9.65% went to Image. So we definitely see a stratification there, a bigger spread there on the dollar side than we see on the unit side, and that goes back to a difference in price points. An average price point at Image is still $14.36 versus Marvel's $27.40.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain way of looking at stuff, a unit is a unit is a unit. Another way of looking at it is a dollar is a dollar is a dollar. And again, as we've talked about before, comparing a $7.99 digest to a $100 omnibus, it's still an item, but again, they're very different cost items and easily a 10-to-1 or greater difference in price. Sometimes each of the metrics is both useful and useless, depending what you're looking for. I mean, if you're looking for who's making more money, it really doesn't matter how many units they sold, and you're often better off selling fewer units, certainly of fewer titles and items, because that's less work you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get a lot of that stuff out there and make more money that way, there's something to be said for that, too. The other three premier publishers that are on the list, Dark Horse, took 8.39% of the units and 8.15% of the dollars. IDW took 3.21% of the units and 3.42% of the dollars. Boom Studios, 2.08% of the units, 1.57% of the dollars. And Dynamite is not on the list in the top 300.
Yeah, I saw that they didn't have an item.
Yeah, luck of the draw, I guess, or bad scheduling or something.
Yeah.
And if you don't have something to come out with, you don't have something to come out with. Or maybe it just didn't sell well enough. We'd actually have to look at the bottom of the list after 300 just to see if Diamond did or not Diamond Dynamite did show up on the list, and I do believe they did. They had two items below rank 300. They had one at 311 with Sherlock Holmes Vanishing Man trade paperback, 326 units, and Agent 47 Birth of a Hitman graphic novel at rank 442 with 227 units.
Were those reorders or were those new?
The Agent 47 is new, and I think the Sherlock Holmes is new also.
Okay. So, yeah, those are not great sales.
No. But that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everything is going to be a hit, but it seems like everything needs to get collected to trade. I've heard rumor that DC may be rethinking that.
Yeah, I was on a listening to a recent podcast, and they talked about how some of the larger collections, like omnibuses or oversized collections, have been canceled after being solicited. Now, maybe that was because they didn't get the sales they wanted, or maybe the new regime has come in and said, well, if you don't have a bare minimum of, you know, this percentage of profit on a project, we're not doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see where you want to have a certain, you know, at least make money or make X amount of money kind of criteria. But I think there's also something to be said for the bigger model. And I see both sides of that one, too, because publishing everything to trade, I think, eats into your single issue sales. Because, well, I could always just get it in trade.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you have gaps in your collection of trades out there, that eats into those sales because the later issues are harder to sell.
Yep.
So I don't know. I'm really not sure what is the right publishing model for that stuff these days.
Yeah, and it is confusing sometimes because you get into situations like the one that always has bothered me, mostly because I wanted a matching set of it, was the Starman Omnibus.
Yeah.
And I didn't buy the hardcovers thinking that I'd get the soft covers, and then they solicited and sold the first two soft covers and then resolicited twice the third one, and then canceled it, I guess, because not enough people were ordering it. And so now I'm stuck, you know, so it's like, oh, and the aftermarket prices for the hardcovers are ridiculous now. So it's, yeah, you create a bad situation, you know, and sometimes they're trying to do the right thing and then it just backfires. And sometimes they just don't have enough sales, I guess, to print them. But, ugh, frustrating.
From a publisher perspective, I can see we're going to put the first one out and see how it does and judge accordingly. That's just good business. From a reader perspective, I kind of think if you're going to do the first volume and kind of imply there's going to be more after it, you're kind of sort of, you know, not bait and switch, but, you know, catch and release almost. I don't know what the right term would be, but you're playing me for a fool if I'm investing in this thinking I'll get a full set and I can't.
Yeah. And, you know, to DC's credit, they did put out all five hardcover omnibuses. And, you know, a smarter version of myself said, well, you should have not been cheap and paid for them then. But, and, you know, now I'm the one that's smarting about it. But, you know, I was led to believe, because in a lot of their other series, they did it. They published the complete hardcovers and then they published complete soft covers. So I was just under the assumption that the soft covers were eventually going to come out and I would get those. And I have been disabused of that notion.
They had trained you to believe that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, especially with their Vertigo-like series, and, you know, and they kind of can, you know, Starman technically wasn't Vertigo, but they, you know, it was in that same vein. It was one of those 60 issue runs by one creator, you know, James Robinson kind of thing. So it was, I literally have a couple shelves dedicated to Vertigo collections like that I'm like, oh, I have them all lined up and they look beautiful. And literally like two separate shelves that are just Vertigo hardcovers, you know, 100 Bullets, Why the Last Man, all those series that I really love. You know, I have all those and I really wanted the Starman version of it. And it still gnaws at me to this day.
I can understand that. I definitely can. I think that's ultimately what led to, I don't want to say the demise of DC Direct, but the demise of the original kind of action figure line they had. Because they would start doing Legion of Superheroes, Teen Titans, and stuff like that, and they would never finish a team.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was just, it's like, well, I'm going to stop getting them then.
Yeah.
And they stopped producing them such as they were. They're doing other figures now.
Uh-huh.
But not those kinds of lines that they used to. And I'll be honest, I'm already that way in terms of having I'll get them now, but you burn me and I'm out with the Hasbro Lightning Collection for the Power Rangers figures. They've literally only announced and released, or not released, but announced the first wave of them, and I'm already at that point because I've gone through the legacy line with Bandai. That was after the high-cost SH Figure Arts line over in Japan and stuff. So I've got decent size collections of an assortment of Power Rangers, in most cases most of particular teams, but in most cases not all of particular teams. And now if they're going to do yet another one, if that cuts off and I can't complete teams, I'm going to be frustrated.
Oh, absolutely.
So Hasbro just won't do that to me is my naive belief.
Well, you'll eventually find out, I guess.
Yeah, I figure they spend enough on the property that, by God, they're going to keep doing figures, you know? That's what I tell myself so I can sleep at night.
Yeah, right? Exactly, exactly.
If we look at the top of the list here, we've got Dark Knight's Metal Trade Paperback. This is the first time it's in trade paperback. Prior to that, it had been hardcover. 5,048 units. That tops the list.
Yeah, that's pretty low, I would say, for the top of the list.
We have had times where easily it would be 15,000, 20,000, sometimes 25,000. So just nothing big really came out in January.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked in the past about how the release cycles, you know, because of events and whatnot, you get the release cycles in the summer and you get the release cycles in early fall to get ready for the holidays. And then, you know, there's just generally in January, February, there's not a lot released. Obviously, your independent comics are different just because the creators, they kind of have their own schedules. But yeah, this is one of those months where I, you know, didn't expect to see a huge sale.
Do you think a publisher would be wise to continue the trend and not just have a major release out, or to try to buck the trend and say, you know what, I'm not going to have much competition. I may actually have a decent foothold in the market this month.
You know, that's a very good question because, you know, I often see, you see something very similar in films. There are certain times when all the popular movies are released, you know, the summer blockbuster, and then there's times that are considered the dumping ground for films that they thought were going to be good but are actually terrible, and so they just try to get rid of them. And a lot of times that's in the January, February window. And now, you know, now we're in March, you know, you see Captain Marvel, so you're kind of slowly spinning back up where they're releasing the bigger, quote-unquote, more important, successful movies. But there are, you know, from that arts perspective, there are times of the year when the movies that they want to do well are released, and there are times in the year where they realize they don't have a great movie and they kind of dump it. So I don't necessarily think there's something exactly like that in the comics, but there are highs and lows and ebbs and flows in the publishing market throughout the year. And, you know, January, February may be one of those months that doesn't have a lot of being, you know, really pushed through. So it would be a good opportunity to have more visibility in terms of you're not competing against, you know, a Saga or Walking Dead or necessarily like a huge event book. Because even though these Dark Knights Metal, it's a trade paperback, they already had the hardcover release previously. So yeah, I would think if you're one of the smaller publishers, maybe you could get a little more traction if you put a little bit more effort into doing that.
I think it comes down to what is the cause of January being typically not great sales, and how much of it is the self-fulfilling prophecy because, well, there's just not great material sometimes.
Yeah.
And how much of it is, well, you're competing against bad weather or holiday spending that people are paying off their bills of in January or whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to know which is the driving factor. And I think we've seen some times in the past where we've had something do really well in January because, well, it's an open field, you know. But other times, even if you had great material, would it still struggle just because there's not as much cash in the market at this point in the year or not? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, I'm sitting next to a stack of literally over four dozen books on kind of comic book process stuff of writing and creating comics and stuff. So there's a lot of, not that I've started reading any of those 26. The idea was to start doing episodes on those periodically. I just need to catch up on my reading and other stuff to start reading those. But it's got me thinking towards, again, what is, if you were to create this material, what are the different strategies and what are the pros and cons of them? Because I just don't know if there had been something terrific coming out this month, if it would have risen to the top, or no matter what came out, we wouldn't have gotten too much above this. And the reality is, we know if the new issue of Saga, of Walking Dead, of something of that caliber had come out, we easily could have had 10,000 or more bare minimum. So I don't think it's that suddenly there's a sense of poverty within the market.
No, that's true. That's true. But, you know, just not every month can have those 15 to 20,000 sellers. Well, I should say not every month does. We would hope that there could be.
Well, not every month does, but it does make you wonder if a couple of those landed in the same month, would they cannibalize each other's sales or not?
Oh, that's a very good point. We talk about on the comic side a lot of times, you know, the weekly sales of books or of series kind of not giving, you know, or there's so many Spider-Man books that, you know, or X-Men books that the readers with a limited budget or a set budget have to kind of decide. And that's why you see some of the quick attrition on stuff and the publisher shooting themselves in the foot. And, you know, there's probably some similarity to that on the trade side, where if two really books that you're used to getting come out at the same time, maybe you have to get one and then think you'll get one the next time, but then you may forget about it or you may not have money for it. You know what I mean? So something similar.
Well, I know back when I was buying a lot more than I'm buying now, when they would have like two of the artist editions come out in the same month, I would almost guaranteed knock one of them off, and sometimes I would knock both of them off. Kind of a you dive too deep too fast.
Yep.
And I think that definitely happens. There's a set budget, and I think it plays differently for people who pre-order either as retailers or as readers through like an online retailer or whatever, and those who shop at the rack. Because at the rack, I think it's a little easier to say, well, I'll just pick that up next week. Not to say you do, but it's easier to say that. And I'm really curious, and this goes back to if we'd had end reader sales, point of sales information, if there was any way to get a sense of how much stuff was bought in a given week that was not new that week, and get a sense of how much of it was from the prior week or 6 months back or whatever, to give you that sense of, and then look at what that person had purchased last week. Did they hit their $20 or whatever X amount they pay? You know, they've allocated to comics every week. They're too high last week, but they were low this week so they could fit it in. You know, or is it just, you know, they were spending what they usually spent, but they spent another 15, 20 bucks to go get this trade somebody mentioned. I mean, you'd be making some guesses as to the why they bought, but if you understood what they bought, you could make some educated guesses on that.
That's true.
So, then the number two item on the list is Infinity Gauntlet trade paperback. This is reorder activity. It's been on the list 76 times before. 4,468 units. Now, we had talked on the year-end episode about, you know, how I couldn't remember if that had done really well over the course of the year or not. And here already it is at the number two slot, although I'm not going to say it did brilliantly. 4,400 solid sales. Obviously enough to get in the second rank this month. But I'm curious how that's going to do leading up to and going past the next Avengers movie.
Yeah, I think it was around, I think the number we had seen in that was 40,000 for the year. And you can see if, you know, if it stays around this number, obviously it'll fall up and down the chart depending on how the month overall does. But, you know, then it's pretty solid sales, you know, over the course of a year, and it adds up.
If it were to stay at roughly this level, it would be tracking higher than it was last year. And that seems unlikely.
Yeah, it does seem unlikely, but also it didn't seem likely that that would be such a high number at the end of the year, you know, because it was just kind of chugging along. And then we look at the end of the year numbers and say, wow, it racked up quite a few sales.
Well, that, to me, is part of the fun of looking at the end of the year sales is sometimes there's that thing of, well, you know, it really wasn't anything noticeable month to month, but it did add up.
Well, and then also it's just like that, that phenomenon where when you see something constantly, you kind of just start ignoring it. You know what I mean? You're like, when we talk about these month to month, we look for things that kind of are stand out to us or something new or something that we were wondering if it was going to do well on the collected edition side versus, you know, how we expected it to do on the single issue side. You know, in Infinity Gauntlet, it's kind of like, how many times do we reference Watchmen in these lists? And Watchmen is always on this list. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I think there have been titles that, oh, it's always on the list or whatever. And then we never really notice where it quietly just kind of is drifting down the list and fades off the list.
Oh, that is true. That is very true.
Because there were times where, man, it was Sandman or some other stuff. It just, man, it always showed up. And then it's hard to notice what's not there sometimes. So it's, I think when there's something keeping the property in the mind of the mass audience, again, the Avengers movies is keeping Infinity Gauntlet there, as is some of the other stuff, Infinity Wars and stuff like that that's been going on in the comics. When those start to fade away and die down, do we also see less interest in the Infinity Gauntlet trade paperback? You know, for instance. Likewise, Life of Captain Marvel's at rank number 3. That happens to coincide with, again, when they normally would have collected the trade. But, unsurprisingly, it also coincides with, you know, the lead-up to the Captain Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, 4,079 units is certainly not bad for that title. My take on the character is it is not an A-list character, despite what Marvel tries to keep claiming. This is not one that intrinsically I would expect to see stay on the list time and time again, but with the power of the movie behind it, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. I tend to agree with you. I think that, I guess it really would depend if, you know, Marvel keeps pushing her, puts her in all the teams, keeps putting her in the movies. You know, obviously the movie sales have started off pretty well from what I've read online. And, you know, obviously that's, you know, we'll see over time, but yeah, I tend to agree with your assessment. She's definitely not one of the mainline characters I first think about. But they have tried to include her in a lot of stuff. You know, in the Civil Wars 2, she was one of the main characters and all that stuff. So,
well, they've absolutely tried to shine the spotlight on her. But I think it's basically coming down to the same thing that happened with the Inhumans, where they had multiple titles and you just couldn't avoid them at one point. And now they're really not that big of a deal.
That's always a phrase the marketing department loves to hear. Couldn't avoid them. Couldn't.
Yeah, have. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're on the list this time with, yeah, Death of the Inhumans at rank, what, 22?
Yeah.
And I think people are ready to have them die off and go away for a while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just funny the way you phrase it. It was, you know, their perspective would be, oh, yeah, we're giving you this amazing thing. And your perspective is like, oh, God, where can I go to get away from this amazing thing?
Well, I think it comes down to, is this something people are clamoring for? Does it feel organic, or does it feel like we went one month and suddenly we had, you know, Inhumans everywhere? And I mean, it's not like we'd never had Inhumans in the Avengers or even in the X-Men titles, for that matter, or the Fantastic Four. I mean, they've always been around, but not highlighting, you know, 4 or 5 titles of their own. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing a longer, slower play on that with Captain Marvel.
That's true.
I mean, you look at how they keep giving her a title, and I don't feel it's really warranted.
Well, I mean, the sales, they keep having to redo it, you know, but that, you could say that about every Marvel series, that they have to restart eventually because their sales plummet, but.
Yeah, but I think with this, it's a bigger deal in terms of just how much they keep trying to put this character out there. And I'm really not sure what's motivating that. But most of the titles of Captain Marvel are selling 20 to 30,000 units, sometimes below that. Sometimes I think that last one was getting closer to 10,000 units. And sure, this one, you know, the relaunch is, you know, the right time, right place, or whatever, doing much, much better on the first issue, but it'll plummet right after that.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that the right play for the publisher or not? Clearly, they think it is. I don't know that I agree. Let's see. Rank number 4, we've got Star Wars, Darth Vader, Dark Lord, Fortress Vader, trade paperback, 3,517 units. Marvel continues to do well with Star Wars, but let's face it, it's Star Wars. I don't think it takes great skill to do well with it. That having been said,
yeah, it's kind of
they are telling good stories.
Yeah, no, it's definitely got its own built-in inertia. You know, the same way, you know, I think you start seeing this with what you see of the individual sales for Conan over on the Marvel side. Obviously, they haven't had enough time to build collected edition sales of the new material. But, you know, there's just kind of this inborn audience for that material. And Marvel, you know, has proven with Star Wars that they're pretty good at reaching that audience.
They're pretty good, but I think if they were really good, the titles on the monthly side would be selling much better.
That is true, but I mean, especially from when they first started, they're still selling better than they did at Dark Horse, right? So
they're selling better than they did at Dark Horse, but they're not selling as well at Marvel now as they were when they first started, by a pretty noticeable margin.
Oh, that's absolutely true, but I would argue that's because Marvel Marvel's greatest superpower is undermining their own line. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
Fair enough. I'm just thinking, given they've had the property while new movies are continually being cranked out and stuff, mm-hmm. you would think that would benefit the sales and make it easier to keep the sales momentum going.
Yeah.
And they're not, again, they're not doing bad with it by any stretch of the imagination. But if we try to compare the current stuff, which is tying into like two titles, miniseries tying into the Solo movies, including some stuff with Londo and other things that are playing directly into what's going on in the movies, mm-hmm. versus the Dark Horse titles that were Star Wars, but new branching outs of the franchise. You know, it's really hard to say that's an apples to apples comparison.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when you've got characters that were created original for the comics and they're the feature characters versus even Dr. Aphra right now, which was original for the Marvel comics, came out of a long run of the Darth Vader title where other supporting characters were built up there before spinning out into her own title.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact they were able to spin that out and then restart a Darth Vader title for a bit says something too. Again, they're not doing bad with the franchise. But it's also a very strong franchise to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then rounding out the top five, we've got Cosmic Ghost Rider, Baby Thanos Must Die, trade paperback, 3,426 units. Pretty sure this was Donny Cates stuff, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not too surprising that's doing well.
Oh, yeah. He's, you know, they kind of... You know, I almost wonder if he's kind of the, you know, it'll depend over the next year or two, but if he's kind of like the next Jason Aaron kind of thing, or, you know, where he kind of takes up residence and writes, you know, four or five titles at once and then kind of gets a good long run on a character, you know, kind of similar storyline there.
If I were at Marvel, I'd certainly be trying to do that with him. There's no reason not to try.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing stuff. It's being well received here. He's also doing Venom. And what else is he doing these days? I've lost track.
He's doing a number, you know what I thought, you know, after he kind of gets a little bit of this under his belt, they'll probably give him an event, you know, and let him be the head writer on one of their next big events.
That would be interesting. I'm trying to think what would be kind of a catalyst for an event that I think would be good for him. A lot of what he's doing is space-based. Even the Venom stuff arguably has its roots mm-hmm. there.
So maybe they're going to direct him toward and do some sort of Guardians of the Galaxy thing. You know, I don't know.
Well, there is a Guardians of the Galaxy title. I'm trying to remember if he is the creator on that right now, the writer on that or not. I am behind enough on my reading there. Yeah, he's the writer on that.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
And that's teaming up a lot of the cosmic level stuff.
Okay.
So it would make sense for a title that or an event that kind of crossed over that stuff, maybe with the Venom symbiotes and... went from there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Be fun.
Yeah. Oh, I like his writing. I think that he, the thing I like about him is he doesn't take himself too seriously. He understands that comics should be entertaining, and I like that. I like that about it.
He understands they need to be entertaining, but he respects the history of what's been published.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm more in the sense that, like, sometimes, like, look, I'm the first one that loves a Jonathan Hickman story because they can be very complicated and very intense and very, I don't know. Jonathan Hickman is a very like vertigo typewriter for me. And that's why I really enjoy his stuff, but I'll be the first one to admit that sometimes he takes himself too seriously. And sometimes his work can be like overwrought. Let's put it that way. So sometimes I just like when readers don't take them or when writers don't take themselves too seriously or think not every issue and everything has to be the end of the world kind of thing. So
absolutely.
I like that.
Absolutely. I've just seen some that are so focused on just telling a good story that they completely disregard every aspect of the character's history.
Yeah, that is true.
Which to me, to a certain definition, is a bad story.
Mm-hmm.
It may be fun, but there's a balance to be had there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, but you know, I also like to see new writers and new ideas come through because, you know, like, you know, we talk a lot about the history and success that Brian Michael Bendis had. And, you know, there's been some invigoration of him moving over to DC, but it's just good sometimes to have someone with a different perspective, a fresh approach come on board. And you know, Marvel in general has been pretty good at that. And maybe that's out of necessity. And maybe it's a, you know, they get away with it because they, you know, they just want to cycle more people through. But, you know, I like some of their new voices that they have.
Well, I think getting a new voice on a property can be a game changer at times. Grant Morrison on Animal Man back in the day, I think, was a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
He took a character that was literally a member of the Forgotten Heroes, got a 4-issue miniseries for him that ran for, I want to say, 180 issues. I forget how long. Well over 100.
Mm-hmm.
At least 125 or something. And it was literally, it started as a 4-issue limited series of a former member of the Forgotten Heroes. I mean, how much more obscure and this doesn't stand a chance can you get? And you got somebody who had a different take on it and really made it work. So I think there are times where rotating out the writers, getting a new voice on the thing makes sense. The trick is, can you do it in a way that doesn't alienate the people who had just been on the title right before you did that change of direction?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hard.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but we'll see how often they can do it. And I'm particularly curious how, say, the Green Lantern does when it shows up on this list in a few months.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they brought him on and they're definitely making changes there. So we'll be interested to see if, like, there's obviously going to be an initial bump, but to see how long he can keep that from deteriorating back into the normal numbers, which is why they switch creators.
Yeah. Well, I bailed off the book after the first issue. It just wasn't for me.
I've never been a huge Green Lantern fan in the first place, so I don't even know if you could come up with a creator that I would be super interested in reading it. So
that's fair. Some properties just aren't for some people.
Yeah.
And if you change it enough to make it for somebody, you've almost veered off what the property is or was. And there's a...
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll give you an interesting example. Like, I like Wolverine, an even more interesting example is like Harley Quinn. I understand the certain aspects of the character, but other aspects of it, I just feel like is super repetitive. And especially like characters like Deadpool, I can only take so much Deadpool. And then I'm just like, that's enough of that. You know,
Deadpool is, I think, a great example because there was a run where it's like, I'm really enjoying this. It's surprisingly good, but it's like a narrow focus for them or take to have on that, where if you go too far on either direction, too serious, too wacky, whatever, it falls out of what I feel works.
Mm-hmm.
And probably into what somebody else feels works that the current one wasn't doing or something. It's, you can't please everybody. And the question is, when you shift how you're doing it to please a new group, how much of the existing group do you hang on to? How much do you lose? And is that new group bigger or smaller?
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you go back to the well on that? And how many times do you change directions? Because I do think there have been some characters where it's like, it seems like every couple of months they've shifted direction. There was a period, I'm going to say maybe in the 90s, maybe a little later, with Doctor Strange, where it felt like every arc, it's like, well, we're going in a totally bold new direction this time. You know, he's going this way. Oh, there's two of them. Oh, we're going this way. We're going that way. We're going another way. Or, you know, there's too much magic. There's not enough magic or whatever. And it's like, just pick a direction. So it's...
Yeah. You're like, I just want to read comics that I enjoy. Please, please, people.
Well, I want you to tell a story and go with it, not keep, you know, it's not like it's a roller coaster ride where you're bouncing me around and stuff like that. There comes a point where it's too frenetic and it's just pointless.
So number 16 on here, I highlighted just because I didn't know what it was, Problems of Susan and Others. And then I realized when I looked it up, it's a Neil Gaiman book. So that makes sense why it was selling pretty well there.
That one didn't even get on my radar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I looked it up just because I was like, what? The name just seemed very strange. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but it's a Neil Gaiman, P. Craig Russell book. So those have kind of innate audiences, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and certainly the combination, I think, brings an interesting audience.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we got? Sagas, of course, continuing to show up on the list. No big surprise there.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just with what we noticed that this is a lower total month sale, you know, lower sales month in terms of what's at the top. So you see quite a bit more reorder activity, which makes a little bit more sense just because in general, the reorders, you're going to have less total units moved per month.
Yeah. Well, and again, like you said, that's to be expected when you've just got less sales. If we look at Saga again, we get that V formation. This time, volume 6 is kind of the pivot point.
Mm-hmm.
What I've never done, it might be interesting to do, is see if there is a consistent shift of a title where that pivot point is. In other words, is it now going to kind of permanently be at 6 until it moves to 7, or is it just going to revert back to 5 at some point?
Yeah, as you see like groups of people going through the series kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I almost wonder if you'd only be able to see that on like the if you were in Images office and you could look at the all the sales from all the different markets, because I think it would be really hard to see that, you know, unless you had the numbers from BookScan, unless you had the numbers from digital, the numbers from Amazon. And then, so if you had all the sales data, then you could say, oh, look, we're watching as people go through the series, you know?
Well, that begs the question of, would that make it easier or harder? Your contention that it might make it easier implies that people are shifting where they're buying the trades from.
Well, yes, no. I meant more of like, if you have an overall picture, if Image, obviously, like at the end of the day, they send their creators a royalty statement and say, these are all your sales broken down by thing. But obviously, that's what they send to them. They have a master file where they keep of like total sales. And then you could just compare total sales from all the markets. And you could see, you know, as you, if you cross-reference that by month, you might be able to see total unit increases go through the trade numbers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly where you're going and stuff. I guess my question is, since we're seeing this inflection point in the direct market, we don't know if that holds true in the bookstores, digitally, or elsewhere. And even if it does, is there a different adoption rate? Maybe people are going through them faster digitally or slower digitally or in the bookstores than they are in the direct market. And would that cloud the issue?
Oh, yeah, you make a very good point because like, for example, if I was reading the trades and I had to go back to the store or wait for my order to arrive, that is slower and more drawn out than, say, the digital, where if you're so excited by reading this previous chapter, you can literally just click purchase next, you know?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if the sales we're seeing are people getting it through the comic stores, and therefore the next trade they're likely to get of it, likely to be at the same store.
Yeah.
I mean.
And especially for a series like Saga, just like Walking Dead, the stores that, you know, this is a series that sells, so they're going to have dedicated stock, you know.
Exactly. It's not like you're hitting that one volume of Starman or whatever where it's like, yeah, I can't get it here, I got to go find it somewhere.
Yeah, and then you realize it's out of print and it's $200 for a $50 hardcover, and you go, well, that was nice while it lasted.
Yeah, yeah. That's where you don't have a V formation. You've just got a cliff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and frankly, you know, in unfortunate situations like that, there is the benefit of, if you really want to finish the story, the digital is an option, because at Comixology, there's no price gouging like that. They have everything available. It's just unfortunate because there are certain people who are like, well, I started the story in this format. If you are collecting, quote unquote, the story, you'd like to collect it in the same format. But if you ultimately are just, I want to take in the story and finish the story, you can still do that without having to pay scalper prices. But it, you know, it, there's any sort of time you have to switch format or anything like that, you just have attrition and fall off and, you know, discord.
Well, this is where I'd love to have end reader information, and I don't mean in this case point of sales information, but if there was some way we could magically get a data feed from, you know, anonymous readers or whatever, and know, it's like, okay, you couldn't find it in hardcover, you shifted from hardcover to trade to the library as your finances went one way or the other or something. You know, how many people shift formats like that? What drives them, and how does that play out?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's something that is so invisible in the marketplace, but I've got to imagine there are some people, it's like, you know what, I got it in this format, and come hell or high water, that's what I'm sticking with, or nothing at all. And others, it's like, damn it, I just don't care, I just want the next part of the story.
Yep.
And I know at times we've seen sales, like in Walking Dead at one point, there would be some what seemed like noticeable bumps as trades, kind of the issue after one ended, because it's like, nope, I want the next part of the story as quick as I can get it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's been eradicated a little over time. And there are also the possibilities of people dropping off at the start of a trade because it's, well, hell, I'll just wait for the next trade. But there's a lot of those factors that I think muddy the waters.
Yeah, and we know what happens a lot of times is, I'll just wait for the next one. People get distracted by other forms of entertainment, or they forget about it, or there's 500 other things you can choose from. So, yeah, that's I've even had that happen to myself, you know. And I mean, think about it from your perspective. You even buy these trades or collections of things, and then they just sit there, and because of time issues and things, you don't get to them, right?
So, oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And I think there is a factor of how frequently something comes out as to if it can be a habitual thing or not.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's easy to get in the habit of watching a weekly TV show, or reading a monthly comic, or, you know, getting a trade maybe every 6 months. Maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't. When it gets to 9 months, does that work as well? You know, when is that next novel coming out by my favorite author or something may get harder to track because maybe it's not as predictable.
Absolutely.
And if it falls off your radar of what to check every week or every month or whatever, they risk losing you as a reader.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example. Sometimes I keep track of the books that I read through Goodreads because it's, you know, a convenient app that I have on my phone, like, you know, the collected editions I read just to kind of see how, you know, how much I read throughout the year, mm-hmm. you know, different genres and things like that. Pretty good keeping track of that. And sometimes I'll just be on there looking at stuff that I read in the last month. And, you know, part of Goodreads is like recommending, like, if you read this, they recommend this. And it'll recommend something to me like, oh, yeah, I wanted to read that. And it's like, oh, that was 6 months ago that I wanted to read that. I completely forgot about it. You know, it's just in today's world, there's so much choice. And we're even talking within comics and graphic novels. Look how much TV there is now with all the streaming services and everyone vying for your time. And video games are huge now. There's so many people that spend so much time playing video games. And there's even people that make a living on YouTube. And the living is they play video games and other people watch them playing video games. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Twitch, that's its whole model.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like it's such a crazy when you think about it, right? When you
Yeah, I've got to imagine when those people explain to their family and stuff, yeah, I make a living by playing video games. It's like, how does that work?
Yeah, exactly, right? And some people are like, oh, you mean like competitive video games, like those crazy tournaments in Korea? No, I play video games, people watch me, and they donate money to me.
Yeah. I'm curious if that's now just a thing or if it's a fad.
Yeah, that is another aspect of it as well. You know, places like ESPN and those other sports teams would hope that it's not because they're investing millions of dollars in the esports, quote unquote. So they're hoping it's not a fad.
It's big enough that I think it's probably not, but
yeah.
You gotta wonder.
And there's always aspects of it. Just like anything that is blowing up, there'll be winners, there'll be losers, there'll be people that their investment will be repaid 10 times over, and people that made bad bets. You know, some, you know, corners of it will be successful and other corners won't be successful. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a question of, is enough of it successful that it continues to be a thing?
Yeah. You could say, look at comics. So comics as a business model overall, maybe not successful, but when you think about it from Marvel's perspective, comics are pretty darn successful in the sense that they gave us the IP that we make billions of dollars in the movies. So,
well, and it comes down to at that point, how are you defining comics? Is it the physical medium or the intellectual property it created?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think anybody in the country would be hard pressed to, or really on the planet, to be hard pressed to say that comic book properties have not become successful.
Yeah.
I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is one of the top grossing franchises and movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, but that's movies. Well, those characters, those stories, many of them came directly out of the comic book page.
Absolutely.
So, it really comes down to what you mean when you say certain words, and sometimes it's really unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would argue if you were to look at the sales, particularly this month, you'd have a hard time convincing any studio exec in Hollywood that comics are really a big deal, you know, as in terms of the printing and the publishing of them.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I think they would be clamoring for whatever rights they could get of whatever they thought was going to be the next top property. But they would then consider that just another IP and not something that the continued printing of the comic really mattered at all.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit ago about the death of the Inhumans and how that, I don't want to say marks the end of the Inhuman stuff. I do want to point out, just because I find it funny, at rank 31, we've got the death of Captain Marvel.
Oh, there you go.
Now, of course, it's a completely different Captain Marvel. It's the predecessor at Marvel, the Captain Mar-Vell. This story was back from the 80s, I think. Maybe the 70s, I forget. And it's reprinting that and one or two other things. But I just find it funny that they've got multiple properties in trade currently being published that are leveraging the Captain Marvel name, even though they're very different characters.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and the potential confusion and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Well, and also we've got the Ms. Marvel Epic Collection trade paperback at rank 38, collecting the original Ms. Marvel series, which is the character that's now known as Captain Marvel. Not to be confused with the other Ms. Marvel that's not this Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
Marvel has always had often had a rotation of who has what code name. I think Hank Pym takes the prize for having had not only the most code names, but the most reused code names by other people. Just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, down at rank, I think it's 96, we have the Color Your Own Captain Marvel.
Well, I mean, you knew that they were going to be pushing all this stuff out here. I mean, that's kind of... They've done that for some of the other movies too.
Oh yeah, I don't object to that at all. I do quibble with the starting phrase of its solicit of she's one of the boldest and brightest heroes in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, that's good old marketing, as they say.
Yes, yes, optimistic.
It drops off in terms of a number of sales pretty quickly. I mean, even in the top 100, we're already below 1,000 units. We're on like 800 units, barely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would not have taken the Power Rangers Soul of the Dragon original trade at rank 102 very many more units to have gotten into the top 100. I think only about 30 more units, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, really, 29, and it would have gotten into the top 100.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to the slowness of this month in general, for sure.
Because at this point, every other store, every third store is getting a copy on average.
Oh.
And we know not every store is getting a copy of everything or whatever. Some are getting more, and some are not getting any.
Oh, especially on the trade side. I think the trade side, except for stores that have kind of pretty much... modeled themselves on being like a bookstore almost, where they will take a little bit more risk because they don't have as much invested in the floppy side. The trade side, I think a lot of stores very much order almost only what they think they can sell. You know, maybe they order a couple extra things, but a lot of times they're ordering, they know what their audience is and that's what they're ordering, kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, they should only order what they think they're going to sell. I guess it comes down to a question of how quickly they think they can sell it. Mm-hmm. And some of them, it's like, I can sell it right now. I'll order it. I may be able to sell it later. I won't order it. Or I know I'll eventually sell it, so I'll order it. I mean, where is that criteria in terms of the time? Because I definitely think there's a lot to be said for being conservative in what you get into your store.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these things take up physical space, and every store is only so big.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I can relate to that problem firsthand. I've got way too many comics and trades in my place.
Well, and I think the other thing too is, you know, a lot of the stores that do single issue sales, you rely on that turn. You know, it's just such a cash flow business, but you get the cash. You know, you get comics in and you sell them that week. Some of the trade side, while you also have to be careful about your inventory, is you may not sell that trade for a month. You know what I mean? So the cash outlay goes out the door and doesn't come right back in, whereas at least on the comic side, you're getting money relatively quickly. So the trades, you have to be careful, because if it's sitting on your shelf for 6 months, you know, that's an investment of money that you can't put towards something else, or it's just sitting there. Some people would say rotting on the shelf. Some people would say waiting for, you know, its eventual sale. But yeah, it's just the money of it is different too.
Well, I think some of these things, having a copy on the shelf isn't a bad thing to plan for. It just comes down to what percentage of your order is that.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, if you're a store that has a focus on the kids section, you know, maybe you feel a little safer at having a copy of some of the more popular kid stuff, like the Lion Forge sheets at number rank 134. This is the fifth time it's had reorder activity. I think that's pretty solid for something from Lion Forge. It's done pretty well. You know, the Reign of Telgemeier stuff, you know, you'd have more than one copy for sure. But, you know, if you have a emphasis or a section that you're really promoting certain themes or certain types of books, then you probably are more comfortable stocking a little bit more of that. You know, I've talked about my local retailer. They have a little kiosk section that's set up for Walking Dead. They have a little section that's for kids comics and kids, you know, associated stuff, toys, bric-a-brac, all that kind of stuff. And they don't have dozens and dozens of options, but of the options they do, you usually see 5 to 6 copies, you know, because they obviously over time honed what they can sell, and they can turn those pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, and I think there's certain things I would recommend for certain types of stores and not for others. At rank 72, we've got Scooby-Doo Team-Up Volume 6 trade paperback. It did 988 units. This is something I would recommend to a store that not only has a kids section, but has one where specifically both the parents and the kids are reading comics.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not the same comics, but if you've got that, and particularly if you've got a lot of DC fans in that parent contingent, that Scooby-Doo team-up would be a good way for them to help transition their kids from whatever they're reading into the DC characters.
Mm-hmm.
And at a $12.99 cover price, that's kind of hard to go wrong with.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know that I would stock tons and tons, but that thing has at least, it has 6 issues in it. So $12.99 divided by the 6, I mean, you're getting a pretty good deal on those things compared to what the cover price is.
Mm-hmm.
So right kind of store, I'd suggest that. Now, if you're at the edge of a college and it's a, you know, hip looking for that edgy, new, different stuff, might be the exact wrong book to have in your store.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess curation is king for your customers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, to me, that's the mark of a really great comic store. Is how well can they not only curate what's on the shelf, but do it down to an individual customer level? I had one person who was working at one store, and it was a good store, a very good manager, but she'd hired a guy, a young kid, who was surprisingly well-read, both in terms of history of stuff, but also what was coming out, that just kept recommending, I think you'll like this, and he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Just so often, and it was stuff that I never would have considered reading otherwise in many cases. That, to me, is something that can turn a store completely around in terms of how stuff is selling.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also something that, from the creator and the publisher and distributor level, that information needs to get fed into the store and not just a... Because I know at one point, I think it was Boom or Oni, one of them was doing a, you'll like this if you, you know, and here's the elevator pitch. But it was almost canned marketing speak.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say it didn't feel authentic, but... I never read one of those thinking, you know what, I'll pick that up because of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy to suggest these sorts of things. It's really hard to create that kind of data for a good interpersonal recommendation system and make it stick.
Yeah, I mean, it really speaks to, you know, the importance of having the right people, you know, quote-unquote hand-selling or have the option to kind of recommend, because there's so much material that you're absolutely right. It takes someone who is widely read, or, you know, obviously if you work at a comic shop, you have the opportunity to be widely read. It, you know, you can read what's coming out and then be able to you know, ask your customers questions and kind of figure out what they're interested in and really kind of help them find new series. Because that's, you know, there's so much attrition all the time and there's so much, you know, readers falling off titles. You know, anyone that's able to help readers get onto titles that they like, that can be nothing but good for the industry.
Yeah, but I think it takes a certain amount of being well-read, being introspective enough to understand why you like it, and being empathetic enough to understand what other people like and why they may like something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's for different reasons than why you liked it.
No, that's true.
And that's a tall order. It can be done, and it's something that I think is very much needed in the current marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also part of why I do the preview spotlight, is give people a chance to kind of sell people on other things they might like. It certainly helps me pick certain things and in a few cases avoid things that are just not right for me, so I can spend my money better and wiser.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a very good point, because I think the older I've gotten, the realization I've come to is that realistically the most important thing and resource the only resource you actually really ever have is your time, and how you choose to use that time has just become, the older I got, has been clearer and clearer that I just don't like wasting my time on things that I don't enjoy. You know, obviously there are certain aspects about, you know, having a job and, you know, paying your bills. There's certain things you have to put up with in life, but when it comes to your entertainment and free time, I've just gotten more and more picky about not wasting my time with things I'm not interested in anymore. You know what I mean?
Yes, I totally understand the limited aspect of time and spending it wisely.
Mm-hmm.
Not lost on me. And again, different people are going to enjoy different things, and trying to find what's right for you is the challenge. Both in terms of what is the material, and then sometimes literally finding the material. It's like, I know I want this, I just can't find it. That always sucks, too.
Yeah.
I do want to point this one out again, because I find it funny. Rank 112, we've got Captain Marvel. This time it's the Monica Rambeau trade paperback. 716 units. And this is reprinting The Adventures of Captain Marvel before Carol Danvers. This is the police lieutenant who transformed into energy and later led the Avengers and such. It collects Spider-Man Annual, a couple of issues of Avengers, Marvel Team-Up, and a couple of one-shot Captain Marvel ones, I believe.
So is it a proper assumption that you won't be racing out to see the Ms. Marvel movie when it comes out?
I still haven't seen Ant-Man and Wasp. I've got it on Blu-ray. It's time. It goes literally back to the comment you made about where I'm spending my time, or where you should spend your time.
Yeah, that's true.
Made some decisions to spend it elsewhere this year that I absolutely do not regret, but other things got pushed to the sidelines and not caught up on them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And what I've told other people in regards to the Captain Marvel movie, I'm absolutely going to see it. Hopefully I'll like it, but I do not feel this character is as intrinsic to the Marvel Universe as foundational characters that built the Marvel Universe, like the Hulk. Like Spider-Man, like Iron Man, like the Avengers, like Thor and stuff, like Captain America, who predates technically the Marvel Universe to some degree. This is one that they have and they keep trying to force the spotlight on. And again, I'm not against the spotlight being shined on characters that, based on their history, may have no deserving of it, like, say, Animal Man that turned out brilliantly at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point where, you know what, it's just not working, move on.
Yeah, that's true.
What else we got on the list that looks interesting?
I highlighted a few things. Let's see up here. Just seeing some Jeff Lemire, or Lemire, depending on how you pronounce it, series. His Gideon Falls doing pretty well at rank 49 with some reorder activity. And then I was also noticing some of his Black Hammer series continuing to sell well. And I recently listened to a podcast for him where he said he'd been slowly kind of cutting back on his big two work and his license work, and he's been to be more focusing on his creator-owned work. And he kind of said, you know, he had done a ton of stuff for Marvel, and I'm not sure how much DC work he's done, but, you know, he'd just done a lot of licensing work. I know he did some stuff for Valiant as well, Bloodshot, and he had just kind of said, you know, when he first started out doing it, he was so into it, but he kind of almost like you worked through that phase, and now he realized he likes to do more of his creative work, like Essex County and things like that. And so it's just good to see that he's being successful, focusing on the stuff that he wants to do. And I like seeing creators that, you know, get rewarded for their creator own work.
Well, Black Hammer Volume 3, Age of Doom, is at rank 6 on the list with 3,190 units. So he's having success with it. He should definitely focus on it.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think that's good for Dark Horse, because they've had so many defections lately. You know, you get a little bit worried at a certain point. But that, you know, he's got that, because he's not only Black Hammer, he's got two or three, you know, it's kind of like the Black Hammer universe. He's got two or three sides, you know, stories with different artists within the kind of same universe, where there's, you know, there's the main storyline that plays out in Black Hammer. And then he has these breakout 4-issue miniseries for each, you know, each of the main characters, like their past or their, you know, stuff that's gone on, you know, they kind of like a side story. So I kind of, I'm glad that overall has been successful for him.
Yeah, I totally suggest that if you've got some success doing creator-owned stuff as a creator, you keep doing that. That's, you own the property. It's just, I've got to imagine it's personally rewarding as well as can be financially rewarding. Along those lines, I do want to mention at rank 192, the Battle Pug Compugdium hardcover. This is published by Image. Did they do the original Battle Pug ones? I was thinking that was Dark Horse.
I think the original, like, individual ones were from, or did come out from Dark Horse.
Okay, this is over at Image, and this is Mike Norton, a great guy, and just did some really great, fun, and bizarre stuff with Battle Pug.
Uh-huh.
Definitely a fun book. And again, creator-owned, so hey, support the guy.
Yep. And then, a little further down, I just wanted to highlight at 159, the Dark Horse World of Tank Citadel. I haven't even read this, but it's by Garth Ennis, and it's basically him doing his war stories anywhere he can, where it's like a, I think this is like a, one of those like phone games, or it's like a, it's a computer game, but he basically, and so he's writing like licensed material for it. And, but he's just doing one of his war stories in it. It is, I just love how he'll write anything that's tangentially related and he'll turn it into one of his war stories. So I like that.
Hey, more power to him. If there's a property yeah. out there that can get an audience and he's got a story that fits that property.
Yeah.
Even if it's not necessarily intrinsic to that property.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
Yeah. So he basically is using it to tell one of his like World War II tank stories, but it's like, but it's technically the title of the comic is, you know, World of Tanks, which is this, you know, massive multiple online, you know, where you can basically, you go around in a tank trying to, you know, get other, shoot other players, kind of like one of those games. But he's telling one of his tank stories, which I love.
Why doesn't DC get him to do Sergeant Rock or Marvel do Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos and stuff?
I don't know, but I love his war stories. I read all of them when they're at Dynamite and even the ones at Avatar. You know, I just like it because, you know, that's one of the things I like about comics is there's so much variety and so much choices. And so when I find a creator who I really dig and I really dig that kind of small world, because you honestly don't see a lot of those type of stories around anymore. And he's known for doing those and he does them very well. And so I'll seek those out wherever he is able to publish those.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. In good war stories, good sci-fi stories, there are certain genres that we get sometimes a lot of stories, sometimes not so much, but finding ones that are really good for that genre, particularly in comic form, can be challenging.
Absolutely. So, and then one thing I wanted to ask, and I don't know how much Valiant you read anymore, but at rank 172, Exo Man of War Volume 6 selling 498 units, and it's not reorder. So I don't particularly think that's super strong, but I've always believed the Exo Man of War, at least in this new incarnation, the art has just been so stellar, and they have Matt Kent writing it, so I'm assuming that, you know, I don't read this myself, but I'm assuming it's pretty well done, and I know from the images I see previews, it looks great. Is it the same problem Valiant's always had, is they just seem to have this limited market, they just can't ever get out of their little box?
I think Exo has another problem, and I've backed out of the Valiant stuff. It is well done.
Mm-hmm.
Both in terms of art, story, production values, they know how to put together a comic. What they don't know how to do, in my opinion, is pace their output, and there are certain properties that kind of come and go, and it's hard to get any momentum with them. With Exo, they've usually kept it out there in the market, but what they've done with this volume is some of it is modern-day story, some of it's in space modern-day, some of it's on Earth modern-day, some of it's in the past on Earth or whatnot.
Okay.
So every arc, there's kind of, it's like a different book in a series of novels.
Okay.
It all fits into one guy's timeline, but sometimes it bounces around a bit.
Okay.
So it was like at one point it was going to lead into whichever event they had just done, then they go tell another story, and then it comes back and it's picking up on the aftermath or something. And it was just a little, for me, off-putting. Again, it's good stuff. When I read it, I enjoy it. But when I decided to cut back, it was an easy universe to kind of cut back on.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were ending, you know, Ninjak, and they would put other things on hiatus. And by the time it came back, it's like, where did they leave off with Archer and Armstrong again? Or what's going on with Time Walker or Harbinger or what have you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think if they had had enough success to be doing maybe almost twice as many titles, they could have kept all their storylines going in a continual manner, and it would have worked out better. That having been said, I think it would have been too big of a line and not worked out.
Yeah.
But the story momentum would have been better.
Yeah, it feels like they're kind of stuck in that in-between where they want to be bigger than they are, but they can't quite seem to get there. I know that they've, you know, had some investment money come in, but mostly on the movie side and whatnot. And I know they've turned over some of their leadership in the last couple of years. So I don't know. I don't know where they're at in terms of are they just settled into publishing what they publish, or are they going to try another push, or, you know, I don't know.
If they get the movies out, and they talked about doing Bloodshot, Harbinger, and some of those things, and doing their own movie universe based on their comic stories, if that actually were to pan out and work, and that would get enough money that they could be cranking out the comic stories at a more consistent pace, I think that would work well. Because from the original Bloodshot, Harbinger kind of war or whatever to the follow-up one, there was a good couple of years that lapsed and some of the characters had just kind of not been touched much in the meanwhile.
Uh-huh.
So if they have success in movie form, and then they can really kind of shore up and rebuild their movie, their comic book universe to leverage in the movies, that could work. But like right now, we're going to rebuild the 40,000 AD or whatever year it was, 4001 or 2 or whatever. And I'm like, I don't need you to pause your current day stuff to go tell me future stuff, pause that, come back to the current day and flip back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, to me was off-putting. So I think there's stuff they could shore up. I certainly think they've got the content and the talent and the quality. It's just the pacing that frustrates me.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I've always, I've read some of their stuff when they first started, and I always thought that the art and the writing was pretty good, especially, I mean, for the size of the universe, I always thought the art was especially good. Like, I thought during some of the series, especially compared to when Marvel was going through a little bit of a rough patch, I thought they were publishing far better in terms of art, superhero comics, than especially Marvel, but just never been able to see them get traction in terms of more sales.
They've had problems getting traction and stuff, and I don't see that really changing just because they've been around long enough at this point that their sales history is their sales history. It'd be hard to convince a retailer to suddenly dive in a lot deeper. Now, again, big movie franchise could bring in people, that could bring in readers, that could bring in sales, that could change it. But I haven't heard really anything substantially moving forward on the movie front for them.
Yeah, it has been a while in terms of, something actually happening,
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with them.
Mm-hmm. You just see, I'm looking lower in the list and just a lot of sub 500 number of copies. And obviously a lot of it's reorder, but, I think it's just overall pretty slow month. Nothing is jumping out at me here when I look at some of these other titles on the lower end of it.
Yeah. Top 300. Is around 344 units. So at that point, maybe as few as 1 in 10 stores are getting some of these things. And some of it, again, a lot of reorder activity around here. So it's not too surprising that a lot of stores aren't getting some of the stuff. But again, not everything, I think, needs to get collected and trade, but kind of everything is.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is just, it's more niche material. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think there's a matter of when you publish it, just know which category you fall in.
Managing expectations for yourself as a publisher, I guess.
Well, and some of this, I think, is just... it ranked 447 from Titan Comics at $16.99 is Rivers of London Volume 6 Waterweed. 227 units, not reorder activity.
Wow.
It's good stuff.
Uh-huh.
But 227 units on the trade. They had done what was going to be an ongoing series, but I think it ended as a miniseries, although I could be wrong on that. This is one of those based on a book. They've got the author actually doing these stories. I think it's a lot of fun. It's how I got into the property. Have not yet checked out the books, although that is on the list. It's hard to say, wow, they should really keep going whole hog with this at these sales. I hope they do.
Yeah, well, and it looks like, I mean, if they're up to volume 6, and I'm assuming each of them is like a 4-issue miniseries kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, there had to have been some sort of demand or at least steady sell-through. I mean, otherwise they probably wouldn't have greenlit, this many volumes. But unless the book writer has agreed to very low royalties or very low rates or something, I don't know.
I don't know. They greenlit a series after this.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
So I'm hoping they keep going, but again, that was originally promised as a monthly ongoing, but seemed to have gone for a 4-issue arc and then maybe stopped. I'm not sure. I'd have to go double check. But I was just looking for what's the lowest thing on the list that I'm getting that's new material, and it's like, boom, that popped out. And of course, I got it on the monthly comics side, so maybe it's doing well enough there that they're doing it in trade to where they can make the trade sell on the bookstore market along with the novels. I don't know.
Yeah. That is it. That's a good question.
So I think that one's operating under different rules than, say, a Marvel or DC Universe property or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few items above it in terms of new material at rank 441 is Mighty Crusaders Volume 1 from Archie, trade paperback, $12.99. and that was collecting volumes 1 through 4 of the Mighty Crusaders and New Crusaders, Dark Tomorrow stuff. So that was one of Archie's many, many, many attempts over the years to get the Red Circle heroes kind of back out there.
And it does not look like it was successful.
It was not, but they went for a darker take on it that I felt they should have. And it was, I really think they should have gone with the previous Mighty Crusaders take that was almost 80s wholesome superhero type storytelling.
Oh, okay.
You know, the original group is wiped out. Their kids are kind of forced to take on the mantle before they're really ready, with one of the surviving old timers acting as their coach. And it was fun. It was good. I enjoyed it. But they kind of put that aside to, they've kind of sort of put that aside, kind of sort of continued it here, but this was part of the Dark Circle stuff versus the Red Circle.
Okay.
And correspondingly, darker take on the property.
Didn't they have problems with like just like publishing stuff consistently in that line? Like they didn't, yes, they like have like dates that they were like, oh, it's coming out, and then like nothing came out, and they're like reschedule.
Some of them, I forget if it was the Shield or one, they rescheduled multiple times.
Jeez.
So they definitely had some problems behind the scenes.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't help it an already hard act of getting another superhero thing up and going.
Well, it's funny because some of these characters date back as far as, say, Captain America and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not literally as far back, but close. The Shield is from around that era. So it's not like it's a brand new one that they just can't get off the ground. It's an old one that they can't keep off the ground.
Yeah, it reminds me of sometimes with Dynamite with the pulp characters. Retry that stuff every once in a while, and it'll go for a little bit, and then it'll crash and burn again.
Yeah, and it's a shame because some of what they're doing, both of the Project Superpowers and then some of the masked heroes, the pulp ones or whatnot, I think it's fun. Other times, it's not an inspired enough story or good enough execution on it. And I think sometimes you're better off not telling a story than telling one that potentially, I don't want to say damages the brand, but certainly doesn't raise the bar.
Yeah.
But I think for some of these publishers, it's a matter of they feel they've got to keep coming out with stuff, and they kind of do. You can't sell what you don't publish. But I think there's also a matter of think a little longer and harder on some of this before you do put it out, because you might be better off letting a property just sit idle for a while than, you know, doing yet another take at, be it Mighty Crusaders or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm just seeing, as I'm looking through the list here, I'm just seeing some of our usual suspects, but just, you know, a lot of reorder, low numbers, you know, just kind of almost kind of like the background radiation of the universe, but the comics retail version of it.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of stuff coming out. So some of it does kind of fit into that background noise category, unfortunately. And I think that there's just so much out there. It's just, it's not doing horrible, but it's not doing brilliantly. That mm-hmm. It does sometimes make it harder to find what are the really, you know, interesting things that happen this month, particularly as the list gets longer and longer every month. You know, it's hard to find this is something that means something or is worth noting out of the 500 items on the list.
Absolutely.
If we take a look at the price points, there was actually a fair amount of stuff in the top 300 at $9.99. That was the most popular price point, within a tie between $19.99 and $24.99. If we look at $20 and below, that's 70.67% of the list. Obviously, above that would be 29.33% of the list. If we divide it by $25 and below, that shifts it to 83% below and 17% above. So still very much favoring the lower price points, which I think is good. We had a couple of items at the 100 and above level.
Yeah. Now, like you said, accessibility and allowing people to get on the story as much as possible. And I can actually see why, you know, since it's such a reorder heavy month, and that tends to, you know, a lot of reorders at the start of, especially for the Image series, which those tend to be $9.99. So I can see why that was a much more common price point this month.
Well, and also, I think it's good because if it's so much easier to get somebody onto a title at that price point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can lower the barrier to entry, get them on board, sell that first volume, you're much more likely to sell that second, third, fourth, and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to, are the publishers and creators playing that long game, or are they playing the short game of what can I get and what can I get right now? And you want to be around for the long game. That's where you're going to make your big money and stuff. That's where having the long tail effect can really help you and stuff. But you've got to build up that library. You've got to build up that readership and build up that audience and stuff. And if you're not doing well in the short game because you're not coming out with material, you're not coming out with good material, or you're not getting people to buy the material you're coming out with, you're just in a losing position.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, and as you can see in some of these charts, it's tough to claw your way out of that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It's gravity and other forces are bringing sales down, and you've got to actively fight against it to get them up. And sometimes that's done with sales shenanigans and stunts. Other times it's actually done with a good story. But I think it's a more level playing field on the trade side, just because we see more publishers, more properties. But it's, I think, an equally hard playing field, just because it's an unforgiving and it's a brutal marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I just noticed, I was just glancing at the comic side real quick. I was looking for something else, but I noticed it's quite a, I've just been looking at the Batman sales, and I saw that it's quite a drop from 62 to 63. Is that, was there like less variant covers or something? Did you talk with, did you talk about that in the comics?
I did talk with Sam on that. It's also the first time it dropped below 90,000 or actually 85,000 or whatever. This is a low point, and there's definitely, I think, a cooling off on Tom King and how he's writing the character.
Okay.
So, you know, the other thing, I believe Sam's point was, I mean, there are other titles to be had, such as Batman Who Laughs by Scott Snyder and Jock.
Okay.
So it's not like Batman's the one-stop shopping for Batman these days either.
Yeah, that's true. I'm used to seeing like maybe like a couple hundred or a thousand drop, but that seemed like quite a drop.
Yeah, and again, it gotten below or down under the 100,000 towards the 90,000 and stuff last month or two. So it is dropping.
Gotcha.
This is the lowest it has been with issue 63 during the rebirth era of DC.
Hmm. You know, what's interesting is my understanding is that Tom King has a 105 issue run planned. So if we're at 63, I'm wondering if that run gets truncated if sales continue to not be what they hope for. So it'll be interesting to follow that.
I would argue that the sales of this are because he's got a 105 issue run planned.
So he's not focusing on making each issue as good as it could be because he has no work. I mean, not in that I said that wrong.
No, I don't think you did.
Well, yeah, I guess you could interpret it that way too. But he has like a beginning, middle, and end maybe for his overall story, and this is like kind of dragging in the middle, and it's causing people to not be satisfied, kind of thing.
We're in a point where the long form is definitely out there and definitely popular, but people need the short form to be sufficiently entertaining and accessible to be around for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
Creators want to be telling this epic storyline, and audience members are willing to bail the minute they get bored. It's a bad combination. And I think that's one of the titles that's definitely feeling kind of the brunt of it. Personally, I'm getting to where I'm stopping to be apathetic about his writing and starting to actively dislike Tom King's writing over at DC. Particularly things like what's been going on with Nightwing, that was instigated by a Batman story, what's going on in Batman, what's going on in Heroes in Crisis, it's the upcoming Year of the Villain and stuff. These aren't the stories I want them to be telling, or at least not the ones I want to be reading.
Gotcha. So have you continued to read Nightwing, though?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So are you like hate reading it, grudgingly reading it? Are you just waiting for it to reboot and change because you like Marvel does that every 30 seconds? Or what is your kind of like...
I've got a long-term attachment to the character.
Ah.
So I'm giving it a longer line than I would have otherwise.
Uh-huh.
And the stories are not bad. It's just I think they've taken one of the really foundational characters of the DC universe and lobotomized him.
Mm-hmm.
And not figuratively speaking. Now, whether they can pull their way out of it and undo the damage they've done, I mean, they've shown, hey, we'll throw the baby out with the bathwater on multiple characters, and in almost every, well, I'd be hard-pressed to name any case in which they did not eventually undo that. I'm expecting this isn't going to be an eventually. I expect potentially even before the end of 2019, we may see Dick Grayson back as Nightwing versus this Rick Grayson we're currently dealing with.
Yeah, when I was listening to the reviews that you were doing from the Weekly Comic Spotlight, and I was like, they changed his Rick Grayson. I was like, oh wow, they didn't think this through because this is pretty bad.
It's Rick Grayson RIC because including the K. I mean, come on.
That was even more. I was like, oh boy, this is when you were describing it to me, because I don't read the book. I was like, wow. It almost was like a parody when you were describing it to me we'll just change his name to Rick and then it'll be.
I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. It's not a bad story. And if it were a character that I didn't think was such a linchpin of the DC universe, I mean, he's got all of the smarts and strategy and training and stuff of Batman and all of the wholesomeness and general likability and trustworthiness of Superman, putting him in a very interesting position if they needed him to actually lead the heroes during one of the events or something. He's one of the few viable candidates for that, or was. And to go with, okay, we're going to go with a anti-hero teen heartthrob take on the character or some such, it's like, where are they going with this and why?
Yeah.
And it's one of those stories I think there's a lot that can be learned by, you know, watching the train wreck as it happens. And it's a well-told train wreck. I don't want to say demeaning the character, but devaluing the Nightwing brand and stuff substantially, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, I guess one positive aspect of the turnover on the big two, at least, especially, is that you only have to wait a few months until they reboot it anyway. So
pretty much.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if by the time Heroes in Crisis, Doomsday Clock, and whatever other events they choose to do kind of wrap up mid-year, if we get a retooling of the universe. Mm-hmm. But I really think they need to figure out where they're going and what they want to do. And if they want to tell stories about the heroes or the villains, and it seems like they want to tell stories about the villains, but that's one of those things making it easier for me to read less and less, both DC comics and comics in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you know, focus on what you like. And then, you know, because as long as they, you know, publish books and you can look at and see on the solicit or look at the first couple issues and decide if that's something you're interested in. If not, you know, you can move on. But I agree, it is tough. Like you said, when you have a connection to the character or you have a history with the character, it is tough. And that can be frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that I don't think they realize when they do changes like that, how much damage they do in terms of the loyalty of their readers. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the last 6 months to a year, they've successfully gotten me off Green Lantern, Aquaman, almost got me off Nightwing. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got me off two of the three Justice League titles. I'm a longtime fan and whatnot of the DC Universe, and I'm reading less and less of it. I can't see how that's possibly a good thing for them. To me, that's why we see the standard attrition. That's why we see major drop-offs. That's why we see, at best, apathy with some of the stories they're telling. And I think they're out of, not just DC, but I think a lot of the publishers are out of touch with what the readers want, or maybe I'm out of touch with what the readers want. That's equally possible. But I know what I want, and I know they're not delivering. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it for this month.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Dynamic Comics Distribution for the month in question. denominator index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25 or fewer items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.